This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And signature support is provided by First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and by Vantage Health Plan. Ray Strother is with us, the fabled Louisiana political consultant who became the top Democratic strategist in his day in Washington. And he handled Bill Clinton, Gary Hart, Albert Gore, campaigns for most of the top Democrats in the country. Now retired, kind of, in lovely Bozeman, Montana. And he is with us to talk about the election 27 days away between President Donald John Trump and Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. And tonight in Utah, the vice presidential aspirants will square off: Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee, and Mike Pence, the current vice president of the United States. Again, your number, 877-217-5757. Before we talk about Biden and Trump, it's Harris and Pence tonight. And Ray, you've been down this road before. Most of the time, the vice presidential debate is a yawner that doesn't have much to do with anything. This time, it could be interesting. There will be protections because of the fact that the vice president obviously has been exposed to COVID-19. And Kamala Harris and her campaign insisted on a plexiglass shield, which the Trump campaign has ridiculed. And that goes in line with the thinking that this COVID-19 thing is really no big deal and that we should move on with our lives. And 215,000 Americans, almost 220,000 now, have died, that they're just casualties in a crisis that is not much bigger than the flu season. What's your take on this weird, weird environment we're in right now and how it will play out in Utah tonight?
You know, I'll comment on that, but I want to take just a minute, 30 seconds. They had one more tribute to Dr. Martin Johnson, who died, who was the dean of the College of Journalism, who was my friend. His death's a loss to journalism, to LSU, and to Louisiana. He interned in my office, and I hired him to work in a campaign for education reform in Louisiana a long time ago. And his early death is just a terrible thing to have happened. So anyway, my thoughts go out to his family and to journalism students and to everybody associated with him, and there are hundreds, thousands perhaps. Okay, pardon me for that. I just had to say
Well, that was well said.
The vice president, I've never seen a vice presidential debate that mattered. I remember doing the debate, helping with the debate coaching for Lloyd Benson, although there wasn't much debate coaching, when he debated Dan Quayle. And it was an event of not great significance because although Benson did well, it didn't affect the presidential race at all. Dukakis didn't do well at all. This one may be different. People now are looking to the number two spot. This could matter in our lives. And because of the erratic behavior of the president right now, back in all of our minds is the fact that perhaps Pence could become president very quickly. It's a real threat. So I can say I'm looking for this debate because of two things. One, Kamala, I think it's pronounced
Kamala.
Kamala. Kamala, okay. Harris, whom I've only met one time, is a great intellect and very good on her feet, experienced attorney. I think she's mismatched with Pence. I think it's going to be fabulous to watch tonight, and because the ramifications that go way beyond that single debate. Is Pence infected right now with the virus? We won't know that for a while. Was Trump infected when he had the last debate? He won't tell us. I mean, there are so many ramifications for this one that I don't see how anyone in America can avoid looking at it and then realizing this is serious.
Again, 877-217-5757 for Ray Strother, who will be with us for much of the hour. These people on stage tonight are a little younger, more than a decade younger than the people they're running with. In fact, Kamala Harris at 53, soon to be 54, is 24 years younger than Joseph Robinette Biden. You mentioned that Pence could very well become the president. Well, Harris could very well become the president, too.
I'm talking about Pence could well become the president next week.
He could.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, and she could, too. But that's another reason this debate is just so terribly important. This virus has proved that nobody's immortal. We have limited days. And, yeah, both can become president. But the chances of Pence becoming president first is very possible.
Well, the mantra from the Trump campaign is that the economy was rosy before COVID, and it'll be rosy again, and that he was responsible for the economic upturn that continued from Obama, who, of course, got things on the right path after Bush and Cheney drove the country right in the ground in the economy. But, Ray, when we look at these numbers in our country with this huge, huge deficit in debt, the debt is now above $27 trillion. We've got 330 million people in this country, and yesterday I looked, 330 million people in America and only 124 million taxpayers. That means 206 million people living in this country, a solid majority, do not pay any taxes, and of course one of those is the President of the United States. No wonder we have a $3 trillion deficit.
Well, it's a little frightening when you put it that way. It really is. Remember, this debt is something that's being accepted by people who used to refuse money for education because they said it would run up the debt. And the same people in there are willing to spend trillions of dollars in their own self-interest, in my opinion. So the irony is everywhere.
And the unemployment rate, which was going down, down, down under Obama, it went from 10% to 4.9% in his 8 years, and it did drop at one point to 3.7% under President Trump. But Trump, when he was campaigning in 2016, he was actually correct for once. When you look at the real unemployment rate, and that includes not only those who are classified as unemployed because they're looking for work, but those who have just given up. There are 20 million Americans out of a job right now, 20 million, which is 16% of the 330 million. And then if you take out retirees, which are about 55 million people, and kids, you can see that the unemployment rate in this country, and it was the case before COVID, is a concern. We've got people looking for jobs who are frustrated. And the question is, how will they vote? Who will they blame if they blame anybody? And who will they put their faith in to make things better?
Well, in my opinion, I think we've had this discussion before. Everyone's already gone to their corners. They've decided, everybody in America basically has decided for whom they're going to vote. And I think the election's decided. Now, it depends on who braves the rain or the snow or the hurricane or whatever to go to the polls or to mail their ballot in. This is an election that should be won by Biden if everyone votes. You look at poll after poll after poll, he wins. So people have already made those decisions. There are people who, cognitive dissonance, will vote for Trump no matter how badly they're faring themselves by finding some excuse that allows them to vote for him. Usually it's, in my opinion, because I truly believe everything in American politics is based on race. A lot of it's about racism. And he's, at the moment, the racist in chief.
Well, right now, Biden has leads, although they're not big leads, in the swing states. In some cases, they have moved to more than 5 points, but in most cases, they're around five or below that. But one of those states that is now a toss-up is Georgia. And I was in Georgia over the weekend, and there were commercials galore for President Trump in Georgia. One after the other. Biden pulled his ads, but Trump had, you couldn't turn on your television set without seeing a Trump ad. And the fact that he's spending money in Georgia is telling. That's a place that he should have locked up and spending his money elsewhere, Ray.
That's exactly right. I've also been talking to a couple of folks in Georgia who know something about Georgia politics. They still think that Trump wins in Georgia, despite their optimism for the national elections. But it's that way in a lot of states, Florida, Texas. They're also borderline states, although I think probably Trump will carry Georgia, more than likely Texas. But it shouldn't matter. I think I wouldn't have said this even 2 weeks ago. I think we're looking at a landslide. I think we're looking at a real upset.
You mean like 350 electoral votes, something like that?
Yeah, something over 300.
Okay. 877-217-5757, 27 days out. Three debates, one vice presidential, two presidential to go. Apparently the presidential debates will go on, although we'll find out. There's one of those scheduled for the 15th, and we'll talk more with Ray Strother in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. In just a bit, we'll go to the phones with Ray Strother, the legendary political consultant. 877-217-5757. Stories galore about the Trump presidency, and Trump, of course, has kept journalism going in a way that it's never gone before. That he does create stories that are fascinating, but some would say are horrifying for the country at large. Today, the story from Maggie Haberman and Annie Carney, front page, New York Times: the White House that President Trump woke up in on Tuesday morning was in full-blown chaos. Aide said the president's voice was stronger after his return from the hospital, but he still sounded at times as if he was trying to catch air. The West Wing was mostly empty, cleared of advisors who were out sick with the coronavirus themselves or told to work from home rather than in the Capitol's most famous virus hotspot. Staff members in the White House residence were in full personal protective equipment, including yellow gowns, surgical masks, and disposable protective eye covers. Four more White House officials tested positive, including Stephen Miller, top advisor to the president, bringing to 14 the number of people carrying the virus at the White House or in the president's close circle. The president, diagnosed with COVID-19 last week, was still livid at his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, whose effort on Saturday to tamp down the rosy portrait of Trump's condition given to reporters by his chief doctor was caught on camera. Other officials were angry with Meadows for not even trying to control the president. So there is chaos at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And we know how this works. Mark Meadows is on borrowed time, Ray Strother. He'll soon be gone. That's the way Trump works. You offend him, and it may take a day or two, maybe even a week or two, but he'll be gone. He's gone. He's toast.
Yeah, he'll be gone. I heard a podcast this morning. I get up rather early. I heard that Trump is demanding to go back to the Oval Office. At the same time, I read something, snatches of things one reads on the Internet, that Washington is a hotspot suddenly of the virus, and it was recovering. It was having fewer cases. But all of a sudden, it's blooming because, and you can point directly to the White House, with the White House being the hub of it. And now the president trying to minimize it by wanting to go to the debates, wanting to go to other rallies. It's unconscionable. And it's got to be an adult symptom.
877-217-5757. David in Shenandoah, you're on Talk Louisiana. David, good morning.
Good morning, Jim and Mr. Ray. I had an observation I just wanted to share. It's an EWAG, basically. But it appears that all the GOP senators and McConnell, along with the Trump administration, are holding up the second stimulus package. I fear that maybe some of these folks may contribute to the Biden campaign with some of those dollars.
All right. The stimulus package is the other big story hours after the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell warned that the economy could see tragic results without robust government support. The president cut off stimulus talks, sending the stock market sliding, delivering a final blow to any chance of getting additional pandemic aid to struggling Americans. Now, today, the president has offered a counterproposal, but it may be too little too late. And There are reports that the president, even by Trumpian standards, is acting erratically, perhaps because of all the drugs he's taking. And he's taking, let's face it, some really high-powered stuff to stay vibrant in this time. And he was rather vibrant as he cruised up those stairs as he got back in the White House the other night. But he's a sick man. And right now... is he in the right frame of mind and the right physical condition to be running the world, Ray Strother?
No, he is absolutely not. And somebody should step in. Who can step in? I think McConnell and some of the people he respects or some people who have real authority should step in and have him step aside, at least until he's well. Because one of the great nightmares of a democracy is to have a leader high on drugs who makes missteps, who does terrible things. He has his finger on the nuclear button. God's sakes, let's get him out of there, or let's let him stand by for at least a month or 2 weeks, because there's no way he can be taking all these steroids and have a clear mind. I've taken steroids, and I know what it feels like. And somebody must step in. I'm not sure who it was. Somebody stepped in for Nixon. There needs to be somebody to step in and stop Trump.
Do you think the debate on the 15th, which is 8 days away, will go on as scheduled?
I somehow don't think so. I mean, I don't have any evidence whatsoever. This is a gut instinct only. That, first of all, he's probably, or if he follows what we've seen in the past, he'll probably have a relapse of some kind in the next few days. You don't just automatically recover after 2 days from this virus, as I understand it and as I've read. So if he has a relapse and ends up back in the hospital, which is entirely possible, that'll be the end of that debate. I think the Biden people are agreeing to debate right now simply because they expect something to happen. I mean, it would be in their interest just to say no. First of all, they're winning, and they don't need the debate. And secondly, there's a possibility that he could infect a lot of other people. You know, the most terrible scene I saw, well, I saw the Rose Garden where they were 2 feet apart, and now we know 18 people from the Rose Garden at the moment are infected with a virus. He's infected people on airplanes, in rallies. Somebody has to put a stop to it, and this could be a good time to do it.
Well, the stimulus checks, which the Democrats wanted, and the president has objected to the amount. The Fed chair says it's a good idea to keep the economy rolling, and right now the president was the one who walked away from the table, and just from a political standpoint, that makes him the villain for those who are counting on those checks, and that's never a good thing 4 weeks from an election.
Well, he did something more cynical than that. He pulled back and said he would reinstate it after he was elected. Another, because remember, there's a period after he's defeated or elected before the new president takes office, several months, 2 months, I think. And so what he was saying in code, I guess it was code, that if unless I get reelected, you're not getting the money, because if I get defeated, I'm not going to allow it to happen in the next couple of months after the election. And that is a frightening thing, that a vindictive person, which he is going to have a couple of months to ride herd over this government and be vengeful. I mean,
all right. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Ray Strother. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. There's an article in the New York Times science section. One-third of the patients hospitalized for the coronavirus suffer an altered state of mind with delirium and confusion. And I'd like your guests to comment on the outrageous behavior of the Republican governor of Texas trying to stifle the vote in Texas. Men and women have died like the civil rights workers so people can vote in this country, all people. And not one Republican, as far as I know, has raised the objection to this horrid, un-American, despicable behavior.
All right. Ray Strother, your thoughts about what's going on in Texas?
Voter suppression is nothing new. There have been very creative ways to try to suppress the vote. In Louisiana, when I was a very young man, and we would go and do poll watching, James Carville and Bobby DeHimmelcourt and a few of us would go poll to poll in New Orleans. Once or twice, we saw people in neatly pressed suits wearing vests holding clipboards in black polling places to intimidate black voters. To make it difficult for them to vote or to frighten them from voting. So this is nothing new. The fact that they're so transparent shows really how desperate they are. Yeah, you're right. My friend and client John Lewis died and put himself on the line for years and years and years so people could vote. It's unconscionable that people would try to stop people from voting. It's happening in Florida. It's happening in Georgia. It's happening in Texas.
877-217-5757 for Ray Strother. We will return to the phone lines after this quick pause for the news on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, it's like we don't want experience. People counter saying, I don't want that kind of experience. But Biden can become president immediately and not have to learn for 3 years what it's all about. He's the most interesting man. He did go in very young. I've known him for a long time. I can't say I have a friendship with him or an intimate friendship with him or anything like that. I've known him a long time. I did a little work for him back in the 80s. And he's one of the more decent people I've ever met in American politics. He really cares. If you sneeze, he'll ask if you're okay. He's not completely centered on himself. I was happy to see him the nominee simply because I thought he could return the country to normalcy and rationality. He's quite a man. So experience there is very good because he was a real driver in the Obama administration. He was the one who really saved the automobile industry that started this trajectory that Trump now takes credit for of a great economy. So you might say I'm a bit partisan.
You might. The New York Times today, and really no surprise, but it endorsed Joe Biden for president of the United States. Now, back in the primary, it endorsed Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren jointly, saying it was time for a woman, but the Times puts it this way: the former vice president offers an anxious, exhausted nation the steadiness, experience, compassion, and decency it needs. And if you notice in George Will's columns, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Republican, he's now openly referring to Joe Biden as President Joe Biden, which is really sticking it to Donald Trump. And Trump, of course, got the last laugh 4 years ago. Roy Fletcher, your protege at one time, still believes Trump's going to pull this out, but let's see what happens. Amy Klobuchar, I think, also got the Times nod when they endorsed three women for president in the primary. But as we know, Joe Biden, after he got the endorsement of James Clyburn in South Carolina, started picking up the states and never looked back. Let's go to Durand in Hillaryville. Durand, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
I was wondering, with the Times releasing Trump's tax information and showing that he's hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, could it be that he downplayed this virus so that the stock market wouldn't crash, so that he could find a way to make that money back? And is that a conflict of interest?
What about the president's personal financial dealings, Ray? Are they a conflict of interest with him in the White House, particularly that the president, as the financial records show, is in sensitive condition when it comes to his own personal finances?
Well, I think for people I know, particularly people who've done business with him, that there's always been suspicion that he's not a rich man. His debt is too great for him to be a rich man. By every stretch of the imagination, he's a rich man. You know, if he has $5 million, he's a rich man compared to America. But being that kind of rich is not what he sells. He actually sold himself. As one time he said he was worth $10 billion, and that was supposed to be an appeal. We're supposed to say, God, if he can make that much money, think what he can do for us and the country. So Trump is a fraud in every way and always has been. He's practiced every kind of fakery, from selling steaks to a Trump University, one thing to another. And it's all coming to light.
Bill downtown. Bill, I'm sorry. I think I just disconnected you. If you call back, we'll put you at the head of the pack. While we're waiting for you, Bill, let's go to James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jim. Two things, if I could, Jim. Hopefully, Trump will be known as the four-eyed president. He's been impeached. Excuse me. He's currently infected. Hopefully, he'll be indicted after January 20th, and soon after his trial, he'll be imprisoned. Now, it's becoming increasingly upsetting to read on the Internet about these possible – there are multiple articles going up that Trump campaign officials apparently are working with some of these battleground states – for those states run by Republicans to appoint their own set of electors, setting off the unprecedented constitutional crisis in this country. I'd like to know you and your guest opinion on the likelihood of that, Jim.
All right. Well, Ray Strother, there are ways to legally game the system, and then there are other ways that are way beyond what is permitted by law. The president... some of his supporters can talk like they're going to defy the will of the electorate, but when it comes down to it, can they do it if they want to?
I don't think so. Because popular sentiment, that voters would rebel at that point. You know, I think our democracy is very fragile right now, and I think we're very close to violence in the streets, because one thing, the president has encouraged it. And, he is not going to go down easy when he's defeated. He's going to find 1,000 reasons he wasn't defeated. And our democracy hangs in the balance. And like your caller said, I think he will try, and his people will try everything in the world to stay in office. Because when he goes in office...
All right, well... These conflation of polls that Real Clear Politics produces on a daily basis show that 27 days out that Joe Biden is in very good shape. He's in better shape than Hillary Clinton was 4 years ago, and he's unlikely to have James Comey rescue President Trump as James Comey did 4 years ago. But right now, if you look at the election, It appears that it is definitely leaning Biden, 51.3 to 42.2, and that's a conflation of polls, 9.1 average in the polls that have been conducted. So this president, who won the election 4 years ago despite losing the vote by 2.1%, his only hope is to win in the Electoral College. It's apparent that he is not going to win the overall vote. And there are only five people in U.S. history who have won the vote and lost the election: Hillary Clinton, Albert Gore, Andrew Jackson, Grover Cleveland, and Samuel Tilden. And Trump, if he were to pull this off, would become the only person to ever lose the vote twice and win the election twice. And he, of course, has been the beneficiary of a system in which it's the only election in America where you can get fewer votes than your opponent and still win. Let's go to Bill downtown. Bill, you're on Talk Louisiana with Ray Strother. Hi, Bill.
Hey, you know, with the White House outbreak, I'm surprised that nobody's mentioned Herman Cain. And I wonder how far back this attitude the White House has had about the whole coronavirus thing has really infected a lot of people that we don't even hear about.
All right. Well, Herman Cain, Ray, 3 days before he died, said he was getting better and was going to beat coronavirus. And it sounded a lot like Trump, who the other day said he's felt the best he had in 20 years. Well, as you had stated earlier, this is a malady that has some twists and turns, and some people fortunately get through it without much of a problem. But Trump does have age and weight going against him, he's far from being out of the woods, it would seem.
I'm terribly concerned about what Trump can do before the election. I don't think he's rational right now. I think there's a good chance he gets sick again. And none of us should want an irrational president sitting in the Oval Office. And he, as I said, he is now trying to move back to the Oval Office as of early this morning. How many people will he infect? How many people will be infected as that infection spreads out in the community of Washington, and Washington spreads into America? All of these big rallies, like Herman Cain, people die after these rallies. You can't prove most of them, but you can see an uptick, for example, in Wisconsin or places, or Tulsa, where he's had rallies. So what next? If he moves back in the Oval Office, does the entire White House become incapacitated? And the Joint Chiefs of Staff are now infected.
All right. We're going to spend another segment with Ray Strother. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we're back after this quick pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. If you get a busy signal, please be patient. We'll try to get as many of you in as possible with Ray Strother. And a listener did ask us to revisit a discussion we had with Roy Fletcher yesterday about whatever happened to those 30-minute infomercials that candidates for office, of low office and high office, used to do and put on television at all hours. And Ray Strother did one of the best known of those and most effective with Russell Long in 1980. But now in this world in which we get our news and our information and rapid sound bites and quick bursts, 30-minute productions are passé. But I miss them, Ray Strother.
I truly miss them because that's how I got started in the business. I did 30 minutes several times before Russell Long. Russell Long, actually, the documentary I did for him, set me up in Washington. But you could say a lot. You could show a lot. And remember, at that time, you only had three television channels. So you were guaranteed a pretty good audience anyway. Well, several things happened. One, the television stations couldn't make as much money on 30-minute documentaries. And it became I don't know if it's correct, but it became an understanding that, hang on just a second.
Federal court just said he.
All right. Ray's getting some information. I hear it right now, probably from his lovely wife, Sandy, about something. But at any rate, we missed those documentaries. And in the 1981 that he did for Russell Long, who was running against Woody Jenkins for the U.S. Senate, last time Russell Long was ever on a ballot in Louisiana, Ray actually got none other than Bob Dole to endorse Russell Long on camera, a Republican endorsing a Democrat. And at the time, Long was the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and Dole was the number two guy there. And, of course, as we know, Bob Dole eventually became the Republican nominee for president in 1996. 877-217-5757, and while we're waiting a moment for Ray Strother, let's go to Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Dan.
Yes, my question for Mr. Strother is if he agrees that the Montana Democratic Lieutenant Governor won the gubernatorial debate the other night over the Republican congressman who had to apologize for a confrontation with law enforcement.
All right, there's a tight race in Montana right now, which I'm sure you're following, Ray. What's going on there? And there was a debate, and we've got two candidates who, of course, are well-known not only in Montana but in many parts of the country. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Daines and Bullock. And it's all the polls say it's tied. And I had the good fortune to see a recent poll. And if it's tied, I would rather be Bullock right now than Daines. He's winning with women. He's winning a lot of demographics of people who vote. And I think that's why I'm saying that I think there may be a great upset in America where the Democrats take back the Senate, and Dane's defeat would be one of them. But I think we can look at that Arizona, Colorado, Maine, where we can see some places where the Democrats are going to take over the Senate. So it's a race here. We're not used to seeing a lot of television and political television in Montana because, first of all, we have too few electoral votes to matter, and Trump doesn't advertise here
because he's got won.
Yeah, and Biden doesn't advertise here
because he's
so the Senate candidates are just covering us up. In fact, I know that all political time available, all available time is bought now. So it's amazing to watch television here right now. I'm sure it is all over the country. We just have a very narrow view here of what it would be in the Senate race being the big thing.
And Montana is one of those states, I believe, with just one congressional seat, right? Two senators,
right,
and one House member. And I think Dan was referring to Gianforte. He was the congressman who beat up that reporter, broke his glasses from Great Britain. And Montana is one of those states where an office holder can beat up a reporter, and people are standing and cheering. In fact, Trump at a rally praised the congressman and got away with it. In the old days, that would be considered inappropriate. Dan downtown, thank you for your question. Let's go to Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Ray Strother.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Strother. 2016, a lot of predictions were made, and a lot of things changed that night. Just the day after the election, personally, I do think Trump's going to win because of a lot of young people I'm hearing who are not registered to vote and are not voting.
You're saying Trump's going to win?
I'm predicting that because of a lot of people who I know aren't registered to vote.
In Louisiana. Trump's going to win Louisiana, but he's not going to win the election nationally, according to most insiders.
Well, you know, last time we predicted a lot of things, and a lot of people sitting there shocked making their report. But my thing is this, though. After the election, what do you predict, or what do you see intelligent people doing after the election?
All right, Ray Strother. What happens if there is a Trump victory? And let's say that it's a Trump victory like it was last time, messy but legitimate. Will the American people accept another defeat at the ballot box as far as the vote and a win in the Electoral College? Are we going to be okay with this?
I'm an optimist, and I think, as when Al Gore conceded, I think America will go back to doing business and say, we may not like it, but Trump is the president. Now, turn it around. If Biden is narrowly elected, I'm not sure what's going to happen. There's some really angry people on the other side, really angry. And your last caller had a point, though. One should not put great faith in the national polls. They're very reassuring if you're a Biden supporter, but they mean almost nothing because that's not how we elect a president. You know, you can lose the national polls by a considerable amount. You could probably lose the national polls by 4 or 5 points and still win the presidency because of the Electoral College. So in some ways, he's right. What happens the next day? I'm worried about it. I'm terribly worried about it because I'm convinced that Biden will win. I'm not convinced that Trump will concede.
Well, many believe that in order for Biden to govern effectively, he not only has to win, but win big.
Right. He has to win big. That's the best thing that could happen to the country. A landslide for Biden would save our country.
But in a state like Louisiana, there's a 95, 97, well, you pick the number in the high 90s% chance that Trump will carry the state. And like Montana, there's no advertising here because the Biden people figure Trump's got it in the bag, and the Trump people figure that they would be better spending their money somewhere else, like Georgia. So the Deep South will likely go for Donald John Trump. A question from a listener about the Senate. Do you see the Senate tilting blue this time?
Yeah, I do. I think the Senate will go blue this time. And I mentioned a few of them. Colorado, Arizona, I think are pretty certain, perhaps Maine. There are five or six very vulnerable seats. Now some of them that we didn't expect before.
South Carolina, for example.
South Carolina are in play. So we could have some big surprises on election night.
It could end up being like Reagan in 1980 when all those Democrats who were in office for many years in the Senate, people like Birch Bayh and John Culver, go down the list. There were about six of them who got clipped by NCPAC. Remember NCPAC, Ray Strother?
Remember it well. We have these splinter organizations all the time. They're going to conquer America. Mentioning Birch Bayh, though, I was in the room with Birch Bayh in Indiana. And I wasn't the consultant. Bob Squire was the consultant, but I was representing the candidate for governor in Indiana at the time. And I can't remember his name. He was a very disagreeable fellow. But the slogan was Bye-Bye Birch Bayh. That's what the bumper sticker was, Bye-Bye Birch Bayh. So anyway, I was there to help coach Birch Bayh in a debate with Dan Quayle. And he said, boys, he said, let's be serious. Dan Quayle, you want me to debate coach for Dan Quayle? He said, come on. He said, that's an insult to my intellect. Well, Dan Quayle beat him in the debate. And he was one of the casualties of that landslide election.
Well, thank you very much, Ray Strother, and happy birthday to you.
One
of those big ones, but
a big one.
Always a pleasure, and we'll be calling again soon. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care. And John Mellencamp, American musician, actor, born in Seymour, Indiana on this date in 1951. That from Lauren Hickman, and that would make him 69 years old. And four major music luminaries have died in the last few weeks. Helen Reddy, Mac Davis, Johnny Nash, and yesterday Van Halen, who was married to the Pride of Shreveport. Van Halen gone at 65 years old, on the scene for more than 40 years. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support. And as we go to the finish line, stay safe, stay tuned, and here's